ticket, please.
Diggy diggy bong diggy bong.
Campus FM jipprezenta għalfejn il-lejla? Ħarsa lura lejn lera ta' twelit u tkattir ta' diskoteki f'pajjiżna, kif ukoll ta' Pacheville bħala l-kapitali ta' xena ta' divertiment ta' bil-lejl. Produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni tiegħi Colin Fitz. Għalfejn il-lejla fuq 103.7 Campus FM, għandi pjaċir li fl-istudio il-lum, għandi miegħi lil-Ġewdi Fiteni li għanitkellmu dwar snin 80 u snin design miegħu, però għandu ħafna xi jgħidilna dwar bands, partikolarment il-bands live, però attenda bosta postijiet ta' divertiment ta' bil-lejl f'dak il-perjodu u jista' jgħidilna ftit bil-memorji tiegħu. Ġewdi huwa vuċi għandu vuċi wkoll familjari żgur li smajtuha qabel forsi f'xi riklam jew anke f'xi kummentarju ta' xi dokumentarju li rajtu huwa wieħed mill- l-aktar infittxija bħala vuċijiet bl-Ingliż f'pajjiżna. Ġewdi, you don't actually speak that much Maltese, do you?
Oh, I understand it. It's you know, that's not a problem, but speaking it is a little...
Ma titkellmux.
Le.
Igustajtek when you try to tell me.
Ninħawat nara.
So let's keep the interview to English. But your background is your mum was...
From East London, yes.
No, your mum was British.
Yep.
And your father was Maltese.
Dad was Maltese, yes.
In the forces, yes?
In the Royal Air Force, yes, for many years.
So you spent your childhood in the UK, or where?
Yeah, mixed, you know, from you know, late 60s, 70s, in Malta, and then 77, the last of the forces, 79.
Yes, they left Malta.
And we left with them. There were plenty of Anglo-Maltese families. Mm-hmm. Who were, you know, left and were reposted to different places, you know, different postings.
In the United Kingdom?
United Kingdom, mm-hmm. And Gibraltar and...
Cyprus.
Cyprus, Gibraltar, yes. Yeah.
So you spent time in different countries?
Yeah, you know, as a young one.
The German army of the British Army of the Rhine in Germany, I know some... Maltese service men who
right.
were involved there. When did you come back to Malta?
Then, well, 77 we went to Norfolk, East Anglia, and then we went to Gibraltar for a couple of years, and then back to Cambridge, a place called Huntingdon,
mm-hmm.
And that was for another couple of years, and then we came back to Malta because Dad retired in 1983. And I went to Stella Maris College for mm-hmm. a couple of years, mm-hmm. And then discovered, you know, the rock bands down at Tinier.
Yeah.
Tinier Battery.
Then you also spent some time back in the UK in the 90s.
Yes.
This is just a general introduction to your life. So
yeah, you know, sort of look, but 89. I really wanted to. Get myself over to London and join a band, and I did, and we did the London circuit, and we did that for a few years, and then I came back in 97.
And also your surname, which is quite rare, like mine, mm-hmm. Fiteni, but there is a slight connection, although you don't know much about it, and it isn't a direct connection perhaps, but somewhere in your background, somewhere in your blood, is the entertainment from like from Straight Street, and you come from a long line of entertainers.
Well, yeah, apparently, I mean, through a shared name, so you know, the Fitanis were although not directly connected, mm-hmm. they were very famous in the 50s and 60s, you know, late 40s. for being musicians and for running a couple of the bars down of Straight Street in Valletta.
Some of the famous ones like Morning Star,
Morning Star, the Cotton Club. Again, I wouldn't know because I never knew any relatives, but we share the same name.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they were pianists and drummers and entertainers. And there was a notorious character from those days called Paolo Fiteni, who ran the Morning Star.
Mm.
Yeah,
was that in your background, though?
Well, it's... Yeah.
Not your personal experience, of course.
No. Although I'm very interested in Maltese history and the links between, obviously, Malta and England, you know, mm-hmm. the UK.
So, Jody, you mentioned it yourself, the famous Tinier scene with garages and bands, and that's an element I haven't really dealt with in this series. I've spoken to many people about nightclubs, restaurants, discotheques, but the live music scene I've avoided for now, up till now mostly. I'd like you to elaborate a little bit on that scene, because you are an integral part of it. And there's even a Facebook page dedicated to that era, which you were a heavy contributor to. You have many memories. But let's go back to the beginning. So you were, 14, 15, 16. You're starting to go out. And
yep.
Where would a youngster in the early 80s, 84, 85, mid-80s,
yep.
where would you go at that time? And how did you discover Tinier?
Well, it was through mutual friends. Basically, they had introduced me and taken me down to see some other friends who were in bands down at Tinier. And I remember watching, you know, from outside the doors of these places and thinking, wow, this is the place for me. I really wanted to get involved and to basically... The same friends said, you know, let's put a band together and let's look into how we get one of those rooms.
There were rooms which were old parts of the old barracks that the British forces had vacated.
Yes, that's right. It was
which part today, if you go there today, where mm-hmm. would they be approximately?
Well, today the football ground has been raised.
It's on the roof of the shopping complex, isn't it?
That used to be the old marching parade grounds.
Mm.
And then later it became, you know, like a football field.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise the surrounding buildings, you know, you had officers' quarters
mm-hmm.
on one side, and then you had 20's place, 20 up.
What's your bar?
He had his bar at the mm-hmm. entrance to what is now that shopping complex.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd walk along and you'd go past what were the barracks. Mm-hmm. They were for singles and for married services,
yes.
families.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd make your way to the top of that road where you'd hit the Tinier Fort.
So pretty much it looked a bit like what parts of Pembroke look like, those
yes.
streets with that kind of architecture.
That's right.
Right,
that's
those arches and...
That's it,
yeah.
That's it.
And there was a long road alongside the...
Inside
the,
or...
The, where the football ground was, which is now the shopping centre.
That's right.
Yeah,
Inside the arches that you mentioned were different clubs, you know, judo... sports,
okay.
and I think there was a dance club, and these kind of things were...
So the government had assigned them to different organizations?
Yes, because it all came under, in those days, mid-80s, came under AST.
Mm.
So there was some kind of ministry mm-hmm. of culture or something mm-hmm. like that. But, mm-hmm. you know, so you've got a big empty British fort. What do you do
yes,
with it?
Yes,
you know,
it's so reverted back to government control, so they...
That's it.
Yeah.
And at the bottom of that road, as I say, once you hit the fort and you went through the open gateway, then you hit Tinier Battery.
Is that where there's that round building that eventually became known, was it
yes.
used as a nightclub as well, Torrey?
The Torrey.
This is where the area you're talking about?
Yes, the Torrey is part of the original fort, built as the last fortress by the Knights of Malta. and in fact it was taken over by the French after the invasion in 1798,
mm-hmm.
And then lost again, obviously, in 1800 when the blockade was finally broken.
Indeed.
And the British were introduced to Malta.
So it was parts of the different parts of the fort, or different rooms in the fort, what we call garages, but they were actually rooms.
No, they were rooms. Yeah,
they were rooms. Were also given to different bands. Did they have to pay a rent of some sort? Or
I think it was something like 30 or 40 lire a year.
A year, okay.
And that was too
reasonable
to have. Very reasonable. And that's to have an electrical connection.
As well, of course, for amps
mains
and stuff, yes.
That's right. So it was redistributed, basically, and mm-hmm. And then all the various musicians within the various bands would then pay annually a collective sum. The first thing we'd do is put in big metal doors for security, because the place was not patrolled or guarded in any way, and there were a lot of,
you'd leave equipment in
yeah,
the
of course. Yeah.
So did your band, the band that you formed, which was called
the Joy Circuit?
Okay, sounds electronic.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
okay,
it was.
So it was. This is mid '80s, so it was influenced by probably the electronic music of the time.
Yes,
and you joined the band and you got yourselves a room at Tignes
to
practice in.
That's right.
But how many other bands were there, and who were your friends? Who were the... Mention some of the people who were involved, who were present on the scene at the time.
So, I managed to get a job with Eric Le Punk, Eric Alzapardi, who was working in a place called Perfect Screen Printers in those days in San Juan.
And why did they call him Il Punk?
Because he was the punk.
He sported the punk, I don't know, hairstyle. He dressed
in
that kind of clothes. He liked that kind of music.
He was a lovely guy. He was, very much into punk and the Sex Pistols. And I think he was the first to go and take over a room at Tignes.
Mm-hmm.
One of many rooms, in a series of over the lifespan of rock at Tignes. And working alongside him, doing designs for T-shirts to be sold in the markets and this kind of thing. It was screen printing, which is great when you're in a band because you make your own T-shirts.
Yes.
You sell them at gigs.
Yeah.
Through him and through various other friends who I knew, once we'd got the room down at Tignes, then, keyboards and drum machines and making electronic music. We all enjoyed ska music.
But there were other bands. I think heavy metal was always a big thing in Malta.
Yeah.
There were bands that followed Iron Maiden and that kind of stuff.
It was a kaleidoscope of bands, different rock bands, heavy rock, softer rock.
Do you remember any names of bands and people in them from the time? Or were you enjoying yourself so much that you don't remember anything, like people say about the 60s?
It was a long time ago. At the time, Colin...
Wasn't there a band called Vandals, for example? I'm not sure whether they were at Tignes, but when I was a child in the 80s, I remember them being mentioned. Brainstorm, Vandals, Stratcast.
Yes, although Brainstorm were not at Tignes, and nor were the Vandals.
Okay.
There were a lot of bands, in garages, in other places. But at Tignes, the bands that stand out, Passion Blade, Subverts, they were a very good band. One of the best. Abstras, of course. Eric's band.
Mm-hmm.
The Faith, they were an alternative band, sort of post-punk, which was interesting. Not too many electronic bands. Probably Chai 2. They were kind of new wave.
Did any of you manage to record any of your music? Would it be available nowadays to play somewhere?
I was explaining this to another friend who said, you know, why, what about legacy? You know, what came out of Tinier? And I was explaining that in those days to record your music was very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the bands used to record ourselves just on cassette.
On a cassette,
cassette players, you know, so they're very, you know.
Like recording a live performance,
yeah,
almost with
that's
a,
right,
without
that's right.
mixers and channels. And
Mainly to remember what you're doing in the song.
Yeah.
Because, you know, most of us weren't classically trained or anything, you know. We were listening to the sounds of the times, you know.
From what did
rock
you play?
And pop. I was frontman, singer.
Singer, okay.
And mm-hmm. keyboardist.
Okay.
Play a bit of keyboard.
You're a tall guy as well, so you probably had quite a bit of presence on stage.
Well, yeah, my ethos was that, you know, love us or hate us, you won't forget about us.
So plus you had very good English, because you were half British, so...
Yeah, you know.
So you found it is... Probably most of the band sang in English, right? And tried to copy or sound like British and American bands that they liked, yeah?
That's exactly it. At the time, Colin, I was... I'd met a guy called Vince Pisani, who came out with the first edition of Far Out magazine.
Magazine, yes, that's an interesting...
And through Far Out, I basically met up with him and said, look, you need writers and people to go out and interview the bands mm-hmm. and be at the concerts and do the gigs and all of that. And yeah, I did that until I was co-editing with Vince.
How many issues were there of this magazine, Far Out?
Oh, God.
I vaguely remember it. I have an issue at home. I think I had written a letter once.
Okay.
And you had published it. And
I think there were about 20.
I think I got you gave me an artwork where one of the very few bands that managed to record.
Tony Sands'
artwork. Recorded a single.
That's
and
right.
I got the single and a couple of sort of back issues as a prize for having written in the star letter.
That's Girls Will Be Girls.
That's right, Girls Will Be Girls, that's and It's All Over Now
it's all
was
over
the
now.
B-side.
The B-side. Well, you know, Vince's idea in those days was that Far Out was to be a kind of fanzine for Tony Sant's artwork.
I see.
Band.
Okay.
But what we found is that, you know, by taking it up a notch and including the local scene mm-hmm. and mixing it with especially the UK scene,
mm-hmm.
Then it allowed bands to kind of be seen with all these big pop stars and rock stars and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In the same editions.
So it was like a local version of Smash Hits magazine,
Kerrang magazine,
or Sorrisi e Canzoni,
right.
The Italian magazine.
That's exactly what it was.
And you succeeded despite all against all odds, and it must have been very expensive. I think you issued about 10 or 12 issues?
No, there were about 20.
20.
Because it started off as a giant paper two-color tabloid, and then it shrunk down to an A4 full-color magazine.
But one story I know that is that you have that you're going to tell us now
mm-hmm.
is quite an amazing scoop that you did manage to interview a very big name and include him in Far Out, Malta's little music magazine.
Oh yeah, interviewed a few people, including Samantha Fox and
when she came to perform here, yeah.
Yeah, she played at Raffles. That was an interesting meeting.
In what way? Was she very flirty?
She was very bubbly and very young and top of the pops, you know. She was very popular.
Very famous as a model at the time as well.
That's right, Page Three model,
But
otherwise, meeting Martin Gore from Depeche Mode.
Yes, that's what I mean. You happened to meet him, and he was here on holiday.
He was, yeah. He'd escaped Hansa Studios in Germany
mm-hmm.
and came out to Malta because his girlfriend had heard of Malta or been to Malta
mm-hmm.
before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a quick flight over to get a break from the studio.
Yeah.
They were recording Never Let Me Down at the time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they were already big at the time, but this is just before, a year or so before they made it huge in America and became a legendary band. But at the time, they were already know, number ones and selling millions.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I mean,
they still have many fans in Malta, in fact.
Yes, of course. As teenagers, you know, we came across their first and second and third albums.
So how did the interview come about?
Well, we were walking down the street from Parcheville. There was myself, Mike Bajaya,
and journalist and presenter today, Mike Bajaya. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And we were walking down the hill towards...
So you were already friends at the time?
Yes, of course.
He was a part of the scene?
Yes, Mike. Mm-hmm. I've known Mike since we were teenagers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're walking down that hill, and crazily enough, I had exactly the same hairdo. So, dyeing and shaving my hair.
Uh-huh.
And
you had the same hairdo as Martin Gore?
Yes.
Which was blonde, I think, at the time.
Yes,
and
yes.
Quite strange.
And so was I.
Brilliant.
And we walked down to Tony's bar in Spinola, and there was this this fellow, and I remarked to Michael, I said, that guy looks a lot like Martin Gore. And Michael said, that's interesting. And funny enough, Colin, there was a big fight going on in Tony's bar.
Oh, dear.
And bottles were flying, and chairs flying, and fists flying, and all that crazy stuff. And this guy was cool as ice, with one foot on the wall.
He had seen it all in amazing stuff. Was it Basildon, I think?
Basildon,
in Essex, yes, in the UK.
So I nudged up to him until, I mean, he's not a very tall guy.
Okay.
But I asked him, I said, you Martin Gore from Depeche Mode? And he said yes, and he had a very soft voice.
Just for the listeners' benefit, for those who don't know Depeche Mode, he is the lyricist and the soul of the band.
He's the main songwriter.
He's the main songwriter, he's not the front man, who's Dave Gunn. But,
right.
I mean, without him, Depeche Mode... Yeah. You know, and
no Depeche Mode.
Exactly, pretty much. So, wow. And you sidled up to him and he said, yes, I am.
Yes, and I was writing for Far Out at the time.
Yeah.
And I said, do you mind if I ask you a few questions, you know, because it's not every day you meet Martin Gore. And he said, yeah, sure. And I'd have bought him a drink, but I didn't have any money, so he bought me a drink.
That's nice of him.
Which was very nice
of him. Was he alone, or was he...
Just alone. Apparently his partner was back at the...
Hotel.
Back at the hotel that they were staying in. Yeah. So he'd gone out to just see what a night out in Spinola is, you know?
Yeah.
Hung around Tony's Bar, which was a place we frequented very often on weekends. And I asked him a few questions and wrote them down on bits of paper that I could scrounge off the back of the bar in Tony's bar.
Yeah.
And nobody
else recognized him while you were talking to him?
Well, a few others recognized him, but, you know, there was standoffish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which was good because... Again, as you say, you know, they were not as huge as they became.
Yes, yes, Depeche Mode, yeah.
So,
he was very pleasant. And
very pleasant.
Did he enjoy his stay here?
Very down to earth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, he enjoyed Malta.
Yeah.
But I think it was more a question of getting out of Germany and completely giving the ear a break,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm,
so different environment, and we were lucky enough that he came out to Malta for a couple of days.
Fantastic, and you wrote the article in Far Out. I should dedicate an entire program to Far Out and perhaps read extracts.
Yeah, well.
Because it was quite a following, right, for the scene.
Yeah.
Boys, girls, locals.
Sure, I mean, it's the
I mean, you used to mail issues.
It's the only magazine we had.
Mm-hmm.
Which covered local scene and mm-hmm. UK scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it covered American rock bands of the time, but uh-huh. you know, we increased in pages and advertising. So, you know, I used to go with Vince many times in his little mini, his mustard coloured mini, full of Far Out editions, and we'd go to all the stations,
yeah,
all over Malta and Gozo. Mm. And so we'd deliver it and sail or return, take mm-hmm. back the old editions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, more a labor of love than
yes.
It wasn't a huge profit making business.
But I would think it was, what was the readership like a few thousand? I mean,
yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And there was an enthusiasm for the local scene.
Yeah.
What about concerts? So let's go back to your band and the bands, your friends' bands.
Yeah.
What opportunities did you have to perform? I mean, was it festivals? Was it bars? Was it where would you perform?
Well, there were various places which, you know, most of them don't exist anymore. But you know, the chance to play raffles, gigs in the '80s would be Denim and Leather, Multisife, Rockabuzz.
So Denim and Leather were the nights, particular nights organized at raffles.
Yeah.
Okay, so instead of playing, you know, dance music all night,
yeah.
they would stop the DJ and the band would play.
That's right.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. they'd rotate the bands, so you'd
okay.
get, you know, six, seven bands playing on that one night. That's why it was called Denim and Leather.
I see, okay.
Very 70s, 80s rock.
And each band's crowd would come and support the band.
That's right.
For example, your band, the Joy Circuit.
Yeah.
Did you have how many... Was it 100, 200? How many people do you think were your hardcore fans?
We were quite short-lived as the Joy Circuit. We played Baharicha, a place called Fantasy Park, Summerfields. We did that supporting Tony Sunt and Artwork
okay.
A few times.
I believe Artwork managed, they were invited to play in Italy as well, or Sicily. I remember
that's right.
seeing them on a Sicilian station and, late at night.
And Germany, I think.
And Germany as well.
Played Germany. And then we played with a couple of other bands, I think Epicure, and I can't remember the others, at the Floriana Scouts headquarters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But otherwise we were short-lived, and then I formed a band called the Ophidian Twin.
Ophidian Twin,
yeah.
okay.
Alongside a couple of the members from a previous band called Prince Eugene.
Okay.
Which
was a play on the German ship.
Yes, the battleship.
From World War II battleship.
That's right. So we amalgamated and we took over Abstrass's old room. It was a very large room. It was underground in a corner at Tinia. And we were listening to all kinds of gothic music in those days, you know, Sisters of Mercy, The Mission, and The Cure,
okay.
and Bauhaus. And we wanted to be just like them, so, you know.
But even in other countries, the following for that is a bit limited for that group.
Yeah,
so just imagine in conservative Malta,
yeah.
it was quite a small group of people. And
yeah.
That were your fans and liked that kind of music.
That's right. There was an affinity.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, always in black and in boots
yeah.
and stick your hair up as yeah. as vertically as it would be.
Well, I'm going to ask you all about looks and... How other people reacted to you at the time. This is the mid-80s and late-80s.
That's right.
In the next program, because we're going to do another program.
Okay.
We're going to conclude Alfein and Leila today's edition and continue our interview with Jody Fiteli next week about the 80s and late 90s scene when you returned from the UK.
Yeah, sure.
So we'll talk a bit about that. Alfejn il-lejla f'dejt l-intervista ma' Jody Fiteli inkomplu l-ġimgħa d-dieħla hawnhekk fuq Campus FM 103.7.
One, two, three! One ticket, please. Diggy 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 bong diggy bong. Y'all ready for this?